So maybe this could be a sound check. It's good. Okay. Don't think I've got a sticky enough face. I think it's just going to come off. So Sagiv is offering a translation at the back of the hall for anyone who would like this in Hebrew. And I've paid attention to Sagiv's translations before. They're often a lot better than whatever I'm saying. I like his Dharma, so if you feel like a change, you'll give the kind of edited, improved second draft. So I think the first thing I just want to say is just once again, so much appreciation for your practice, for your dedication. You may or may not feel it or imagine it, but there's a really nice atmosphere here which is being generated by each person's dedication, sustaining and showing up and exploring and developing, bringing something into being, creating this retreat together. And with that, I just want to drop in an idea that we can have. And we can use it now. In a moment, we're going to have a quiet meditation and then we're going to flow into the talk. Yeah. Anything that we create in the meditation, I like to think of as if we're like blowing up a balloon. Yeah, it's like we have our intention, we have our practice, we have developing something, like just blowing very gently into a balloon as we go through the meditation. So by the time you get to the end of the meditation, you could imagine you have this really large balloon. Yeah, of like whatever it is that you've been cultivating, bringing into being, adding your intention towards. It could be metta, it could be being more gathered, any of those kind of qualities. Yeah. And then oftentimes the bell rings, and what we do is we just let go of that balloon, the balloon kind of flies away. And then the next time we come into the meditation, there's my balloon. And we can pick up our balloon, and then we blow it up again. These kind of sitting meditations become like really skillful. And by the end, it's like, oh, really nice. And then, oh, let's let that go. And I'll go off and do my walking meditation, look around. Is there a balloon around there? So start blowing it up again on the balloon in the walking, yeah, wherever it is. The idea could be is like when we've generated that quality, kind of just stay with it a little bit and bring it with you, walk with it to the walking. Yeah. You're kind of like stay in that atmosphere that you've created, you've generated, you've developed in your experience, and just bring it along with you. Yeah. And then there's less puffing needed to do. So just kind of flow that into the walking. Every so often, just need to blow in there. Okay, got it going again. And then to keep sustaining it. We can see if we can sustain things across the apparent boundaries of when someone rings a bell or we change the posture of the body or open the eyes again. Yeah. So I call that the balloon analogy, you know, thinking in terms of a balloon. So that you can have that, that's free. Yeah. And the second one that comes along with that, which is called the victory lap. Yeah. So the victory lap is the same thing. Yeah? Get to the end of the meditation and then you have a victory lap. So what you'll notice in, I'm particularly thinking of like athletics, you know, where they run around the track as fast as they can. So run, who's the fastest? And then everyone who doesn't come first falls on the floor, whatever they do, it's like, oh, finished. The one who wins, who must have given everything to be able to be the first one, still has enough energy to run around the lap, waving at people, maybe they're holding their trophy or their ribbons or their team sponsorship or whatever it is. Yay, got so much energy left. So when we finish the meditation, maybe the bell rings and we just have a victory lap. Whatever's here, just enjoy it. Yeah, take it for a little walk, you know, embrace that atmosphere. Enjoy whatever you've cultivated. And then keeping that balloon inflated, if you like that idea, and bringing that along with you. Now, whenever someone suggests doing more, goodness, you know, but do it in a light way, do it in an enjoyable way, hopefully it supports you. Okay, so there's a couple of ideas we can play with if you like. So let's have a little bit of practice. Just use the practice that we had from the morning. Yeah. So any sense of contraction in the being, any tightness in the body, any closeness in the attention, just letting that soften, open, lessen for a little bit of time. Maybe coming to the breath or the sounds or the body sensations as we soften, as we loosen, as we open. Really not minding too much if you don't grab every particle of experience, you know, you miss a few, because we're going to just really relax the forehead now. Yeah, might be concentration coming from the forehead, the eyes. It's really letting those soften. If appearances fade, it's okay. But maybe we can still be sensitive to what's here. Maybe we can invite the shoulders to relax, invite the chest to open, give a bit more space. Letting the belly out, release, give more space. Just letting the awareness expand, stretch, flow through the whole body. Right down to the fingertips, right down to the feet, and also the back of the body. So awareness of the whole body here. In the awareness of that whole body, just noticing the breath flowing in, filling the lungs, flowing out. Just noticing the air within the body. Maybe there's also a bit of air or gas in the belly. You can notice the air in the mouth, inside the nostrils, in the ears. The lightness of the air in the body. So notice that this body has fluidity. It's flowing, the blood, the other watery fluids, the mouth, and the digestive system. This body is fluid, it's flowing. Also see, you could feel the energy, the electricity of the body, the heart pumping, the nerves, letting you know what's here, what's moving, electrical signals, fire, aliveness in the body. There's also a solidity, maybe even a heaviness to the body, the hardness of the skull, of the spine, of the ribs, bones within the arms, a weightiness, an earthiness. So of the skin, layers of skin. Maybe even the body feels heavier. So we relax it. The weight, strength it takes to hold it up. You may also wish to remember or recall that even things that appear solid are mostly made up of space. Within the atoms of physicality of the bones, it's really like one speck of dust in this big hall that's actually physicality, actually form. This whole form is made of space. Appears to be form. It can also be felt, sensed as space. It can expand, it can soften. What then is this body? So this meditation we were just engaging in there, and maybe you're keeping going. You have your balloon slightly inflated as we transition, if you want, is sometimes referred to as an elements meditation. It's like a contemplation on the body, how we can perceive it. And I quite like it as a meditation because when I start thinking in terms of fluidity, my body feels more flexible, more fluid, certain ways. When I imagine my body as earth and weight and heaviness, it feels heavy. I feel like grounded. I feel becoming earthy. And a couple of things I like about it. One is I like feeling my body in different ways and being able to incline myself to feel it in different ways. And I also like how it reveals how the body exists in my imagination. Yeah, my felt sense of it depends on how I conceive of it. Yeah. It's a way of saying that the body is empty. It's waiting to be perceived a certain way, and I start to perceive it a certain way, and it appears a certain way to me. Yeah. So I really love what these practices can do. Or we could say it another way. I love what these practices can undo. Yeah. So fabricate, unfabricate. Last night, while you were in here listening to Zohar's talk, I don't understand Hebrew enough to come and listen, so I went for a walk under the moon. The muezzin calling from across the way, woodpeckers and owls, and birds, you know, in the atmosphere. And there's this feeling, it's like, oh, it's all out there, and I'm here really enjoying myself. And then this other kind of sense can appear, is like, ah, I'm inside all of this. Like the awareness is actually all around. It's not somewhere in front, not somewhere perceived outside. All of this is kind of happening within me. Yeah, I see, oh, I can shift between these different lenses. One of the skills we can gain through meditation is being able to dive in, to support, to create different ways of perceiving. Yeah, and that could be an idea of what meditation can be. So speaking about this idea, in the one sense, we often think about what am I doing in my meditation to create things? Yeah. And the other angle, as we said, is like, what am I doing to uncreate things or undo things or change the way I'm seeing things? Yeah. And this actually is probably like a subtler side, because when things disappear, we might think, oh yes, I remember that teaching, everything is anicca. Yeah. Everything is inconstant. That's why it's gone. Yeah, that's why it disappeared. But what we really want to see is it was fabricated, yeah, which means it's empty. And being empty, it can be fabricated in different ways. Yeah. And so that's what I want to touch on this evening. But you know, being an evening talk, I don't want to overload it with too much stuff, but let's just say that there are many things which seem like they're not fabricated for us, yeah? And yet they probably are. Everything that appears, yeah, even very subtle things like space, like time, like distance, like the sense of self, like meditation, like the Dharma, yeah, all are fabricated. So we can keep going on and on and on. I hope I won't keep going on and on and on, and around 8:30, I'll come to a close. A helpful framework that we can use through this talk is the three characteristics of existence that the Buddha spoke about. Yeah? Sabbe, Sankara, Anicca. All conditioned things are Anicca, and then, you know, as we've said before, how we translate these words is going to matter. Yes, some will translate impermanent, inconsistent, inconstant, and all of these things. Yeah. They're inconstant and they arise dependent on other inconstant things. Yeah. So they're kind of like doubly inconstant. Not just inconstant, they actually rely on things which can't be constant. So how could they be anything but inconstant? How could they be anything but what we might say impermanent? And one of these things which is not constant for them is our perception of them. That also changes. Yeah? The way you're perceiving this thing is changing over time. So we could take something that's not physical, yeah, and you'll see that your perception of it changes over time. So apparently there's a talk happening here. I mean, I haven't seen it. I don't know if any of you have seen it turning up, but there's a talk unfolding between us. And there can be a perception, this guy up there is creating the talk. I could have the perception, let's say, that you are generating the talk, adjusting it, shaping it. You know, it's like, if I get the sense that you're not smiling, you're not enjoying, maybe I'll change, skip that bit. I'm getting that feeling like, oh, you're getting into this bit, maybe we'll add more of it. So we're co-creating it. Yeah. But at any time, we'll see it differently. Yeah. We'll see, oh, yeah, I'm participating in this. I'm not participating in this. It's going well. It's not going well. And all of these perceptions will happen. And each of them will affect how it appears. Yeah. The talk itself is inconstant, we hope. It will end at a certain point, begin at a certain point. But it's also changing in what it is. And what's it even about? I can't tell yet. You know, like he started off with his elements, and now he's talking about inconstancy. Like, well, I don't even know where he's going. He probably doesn't know where he's going. You know, I have an idea, but we'll see. The second of these characteristics is to say that all these conditioned things, all these fabrications, a dukkha. And again, this word dukkha, what's that going to mean for you? Yeah, we spoke about it in the Q&A. You know, I had the translation yesterday. You know, dukkha as the word suffering. Yeah, so dukkha is suffering. All fabricated things are suffering. Are they? Maybe, maybe not. Yeah. What do we mean by suffering? In another way, all things that are dukkha are stressful. Anything that appears is stressful. Yeah, obviously, that I would say that depends on how you relate to them. Yeah. So the fabricated thing of air, air is fabricated. Yeah, it's made up of other things. It doesn't exist on its own. It's, I don't know what the composition of air is. Someone here probably does. So air is fabricated. It's constructed. It's brought together. It's compounded. Is it suffering that there's air? I think not having air would probably be more suffering. Yeah. And so is it stressful that there's air? I wish there wasn't air. You know, that would be less stressful. But in a certain sense, maybe it would. If there was also not the need for it, if there wasn't the time in which we were concerned about it, the appearance of air, probably when air is really present for us. So either the air quality is very bad because someone's done something to make it smell bad or taste bad or be bad, then it becomes aware of it. So our perception of air is perceived at the time when it's dukkha. When we're not perceiving air, you know, we're just trusting there will be air. I breathe in, I breathe out, I'm okay. There's air. When we want something, when we long for something, when we seek a reliability in something which cannot be relied upon, yeah, there is dukkha. That idea of dukkha in the sense of that unskillful relationship. If you want a reliable happiness from things which are inconstant, are themselves unreliable, yeah, then we suffer. And so we'd say, you know, seeing that, we let go. We let go. Ah, this can't bring me lasting satisfaction. I let go in relation to that. Something opens, something frees. And it's not just letting go, it's letting in also. Yeah? Letting be and also letting go. Yeah? Kind of three time frames of lettings. Yeah? Let it arise. If it's dukkha, then we just don't grasp onto it. Doesn't mean you need to stop those dukkha things from arising. Yeah, it's because it's in the way we relate. And if it's here, we can let it be. Yeah, we don't have to quickly fix it, get rid of it. That will be also dukkha. And then also in time, let it go. Let it go. The third characteristic is a little different. Yeah? It's not related to sankharas. It's not related to compounded or conditioned. Fabricated things. It's all things. All things, even not compounded, not fabricated, not made up things.
What is sankhara?
Sankhara, fabrication. So is fabrication good? Or yeah. Yeah, it's like fabrique from the French, Latin, to make. My jumper was fabricated in a factory, a fabrication, a fabrique. So thank goodness. All things, all Dharma, all that can be is anatta. Yes? Not to be taken as self could be one definition of that. Yeah? All the things, not to be taken as self. This is not my jumper. Is it? But we might say that for convenience. Yeah. But if someone else ends up wearing it, I will suffer if I didn't give it to them. Oh, they're wearing my jumper. Why is that? It's not mine. Yeah. And I wasn't wearing it, and I have another one. You're welcome to it. If anyone wants it, they can have it. Another way of saying this is all appearances are not a self from their own side. Yes? Like, things don't appear a certain way from their own side. How we look at them, how we relate to them, how we listen to them affects how they appear, and they will appear differently. Yeah. it's easiest, as we say again, to look at something that's not physical, like this talk or whatever, yeah? It doesn't have a way it is. It depends on what you think of it, how you conceive of it in the way that it appears. But this does also extend to things, yeah? The thingness of things, a tree, yeah? How a tree appears depends on how you look at it. When you look at it with appreciation, you suddenly, I don't know if you've had this experience on the meditation, you say, oh, that was a really whatever meditation, it wasn't that impressive. Well, I come outside and suddenly the sun is coming through the tree and I just think, hang on, this isn't normal. You know, you kind of see things in a different way. Or you just see a person, you just think, like, what a beautiful person. And it's not from a sense of attraction. I need, you know, oh, I must get that person in my life. It's just like, oh, another one. Oh, they're all beautiful. How funny, yeah? They appear dependent on the state of the heart. That changes how things appear. So we say they are anatta, not themselves from their own side, dependent on the way that I see them. So a way of saying it is like, everything is empty of self. And empty of being taken as a self. Right. So we just did this exploration through the body. Yeah, the body's a good example for this. Yeah. When I look at it certain ways, at least for me, it appears in different ways. So it's kind of empty of being one way or the other. It's difficult to see it in kind of two ways at the same time. Maybe it's possible. Maybe you can make kind of cocktail versions. It's really heavy. And it's entirely made of space. Yeah. So, oh, a little bit of a struggle conceptually. But if I really see it as heavy, it feels heavy to me. Yeah. Maybe I'm just hypnotizing myself. Maybe you're less suggestible. Yeah. But if there's something, if it shifts just a degree, then we can say it's empty of being its own way entirely. Yeah. It's not just its own way. It's also affected by things. Probably it's worth just pointing out why the teachings shift from sankhara to dharma when they go to anatta. Yeah, it's kind of just to leave room for a more expansive exploration of things which cannot be self and should not be taken as self. Yeah, so the teachings are actually saying all the sankhara things are anicca. They are inconstant, they're passing, they're coming and going. But maybe you could say there's something else that's not a sankhara, not compounded, not fabricated, that isn't anicca, is not impermanent, is not unreliable because of that. Yeah. But even that, whatever that might be, yeah, is not to be taken as self and is perhaps also not itself from its own side. Yeah. So the use of the language in the Buddha Dharma, I think it's really accurate. It's either, you know, either the Buddha themselves or the people who wrote it down, or you know, the people who, like Sagiv is doing, gave the second draft. Yeah, like, got it really right. You know, it's like, yeah, you're close, but thank you. So we don't know who nailed it, but we can kind of rely in the real skill, the real beauty of the use of the language. So all of this seems to kind of point towards a non-attachment to things, a non-fixity to things. Yeah? They're much more fluid, much more open, much more capable of being soft with. Yeah? And a fluidity of moving to fluidity, moving to solidity, moving to gas, moving to space, moving to things that they're seeing, capacity to see in different ways, encourages a sense of appropriateness, sometimes called freedom, through non-clinging, yeah. Freedom from, through non-clinging, not clinging onto things, yeah. The pushing, the pulling, the grabbing, the grappling, the squashing, building up, all of those kinds of things, yeah. And sometimes this can be the focal point of our practice. And I actually do think it's a very, very beautiful way of practicing non-clinging, practicing opening, practicing unbinding, like we've been doing today, unbinding the contraction, dissolving, resolving, letting into. But there's also something else going on in our practice. Yeah, it's kind of driving us. There's a certain fire. Yeah, there's a certain direction. We're going for something. And the Buddha and many others' spiritual teachings are kind of encouraging us to engage with something, to head towards something. Yeah, not just become. The goal is just to dissolve completely. Like, no, it's actually something more than that. Yeah. And also, perhaps you came here for something more than that. There's something in you that wishes for something more than that. And there's a beauty to that. So I want to support that. And at times, we may have used this, you know, freedom from non-clinging as a, which can be such a useful tool, as an oversimplification, and we can turn away from some really beautiful things. So something we'll often hear at times, and I've seen it in myself, and perhaps we've all done it at certain times, like something open, something beautiful came into being. It's like, I don't know quite exactly what I did, but there was a really nice space. And so I just, whatever, just felt really calm, felt really present. It was a nice experience. And then I remember non-clinging. Hey, don't cling on to this. It's just an experience. Okay? And that's beautiful. But also, it might be kind of stepping outside of this idea of how did that get fabricated? What brought that into being? Or what was lessened that allowed that to be there? Yeah. And if you were a cook in the kitchen and then all of a sudden you just made the really great Taina recipe that everybody loved and you just said, well, these things, they just happen sometimes. Or you might think back and it's like, well, there's three lemon peels here. So I must have put like three lemons in there. It's like, next time I'll try the three lemons with this amount. And it's like that much salt when I just throw it like that, you know, spin it three times the other way. And it's like, I don't know which bit works, but I'm kind of doing it like this. And so it's a little bit like making that invitation. You can come again. Like I'm not clinging to you. I'm not demanding the next trainer has to be this one. Yeah. But I'm going to do it in a similar way, create the similar kind of conditions and just open. So yeah, it might be good, might not be good. And then I'll keep tasting, testing, trying things out. So we become a skillful fabricator. Yeah, we stumble across a recipe, keep trying it. Try it out. It doesn't mean you're clinging. Yeah, you're interested in creating something. Another image we could have is like you invite these qualities, like you invite a friend around. Yeah, and maybe you tidy up a little bit before your friends arrive. Or you prepare, some herbal tea or whatever it is you do. Yeah. Something that's going to make it nice for them to come. So we get a sense of what do they like? What do they enjoy? And what chair do they like to sit in? What cushions do they like? And then prepare it like that for them. So there's this middle way between clinging and non-clinging, as we might think about it. Yeah. It's kind of middle way. There's a limitation to everything, yeah. And I'm not picking on anyone who talks about freedom from non-clinging, but I'm just saying that we have to be skillful within where we go. What are we supporting? What are we bringing into being? Because it all really matters. Yeah, there isn't a practice that you're doing apart from your intentions and your ideas and your concepts of what you're doing. So if I'm adding something into the mix, I hope that's helpful. Okay? But I'm not putting anyone else's ideas down at the same time. Just saying there are many ideas we can have. So similarly, in our practice, we will see that anicca can get really to the front and center of how we practice. Everything is anicca. Yeah? That's really important to see, really beautiful to see. Yeah? Everything that there is arises and passes. And it's probably one of the most easily accessible of those three characteristics. Yeah. Everything I've experienced in my life has arisen from somewhere and from some set of causes and conditions, and in time it's passed away. Yeah. Like the person I used to be, the friends I used to work with, everyone has changed. Yeah, they have changed. On a longer time scale, everyone, including our life, including this world, is impermanent. But I don't think it's so much pointing towards that. It's more like the inconstancy of things, I think, is just more interesting. Because we have a sense, is that I am like this. You know, has anyone ever found themselves saying, you know, this is the way I am, you know, I'm like this. And then you have to kind of add in the set of circumstances in which I appear like this, and then in other ones I actually appear differently. And like among certain friends, I'm like this, and among other friends or other beings, I'm like this. With no friends, no beings, I'm like this. But I'm always like this. This is how I'm really. So I'm, you know, and so I have a fixed idea of myself that's adaptable and changeable over time, depending on who's around. But I'm, yeah. And so we kind of get to see the anicca within that. It's kind of causes and conditions support that. And this can be just on its own. If we say, yeah, everything is anicca, everything is inconstant. You know, the Buddha would guide us through this set. And then we can go beyond that. So each time it's like the teachings are to be put into practice. This is something very skillfully put by Gregory Kramer, who developed Inside Dialogue. All the teachings are practices, something worth kind of contemplating. It's like, so you say it's a Nietzsche, how does that become a practice? Before we get to that, just like step you through it. So the Buddha would say, he had this kind of call and response. We don't need to do the call and response, but like he would say, hey, meditators, maybe first of all, he said, you know, let's get some drums. You know, so that, you know, get the rhythm and the rhythm, and then he would do his call and response thing and say, hey, all the sankharas you see, are they a Nietzsche or not a Nietzsche? Can you say it? They're a Nietzsche, Lord. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it kind of goes through to the next one. All right, now everything that's a Nietzsche, is that stressful or not stressful? Can you say it? Stressful. All right. Now, does it make any sense for taking things which are anicca and dukkha as who you really are? No. Okay, so they're not me, not mine, not myself. And you take that path. And I feel that Rob did a really good job with this, of turning these actually into practices. And I don't know if he picked it up from someone else. As far as I know, he developed this. Yeah, just like take each one and just go through your experience. Okay, something's happening. This is a Nietzsche. Okay, what happens when I see it that way? Because what's normally happening is we have kind of like default settings, and then we have the advanced settings that you go into. It's the bottom of the menu. If you look inside your mind, somewhere down at the bottom, press advanced settings, three characteristics, and upgrade to the latest settings. And then this is a Nietzsche. Oh my goodness. I hadn't realized. No, it's not fixed. No, it's not permanent. No, it's inconstant and it's changing and it's dependent on the way that you look at it. Okay. So look at it as a Nietzsche and what happens? Oh, I don't feel like I'm grasping onto it in the same way. Something open, something lightened. Yeah. Other times, I really don't want this to be impermanent. You know, I really don't want this to be inconstant, and there could be still some kind of grasping onto that. Yeah. But as we add it in, we see, wow, this really changes our experience, really changes. But what's helpful is that when we combine these with metta practice, this is where they really start to get a little bit interesting. Because what does metta practice actually do? Yeah. Now, I don't know. So, I have some ideas. I think it makes us as beings more flexible, more able to go into more areas of our life. Yeah. So there's this kind of general idea that we could say metta practice is kind of bringing a sense of samadhi, okay, which is a sense of gathering us into presence, into well-being. Okay. Now that's more indication of, you know, metta being there. Yeah. Metta practice itself is whatever it is that we're doing to get it going. Yeah, it could be bring a being to mind, send phrases, after a while, sometimes we're lucky and we create an atmosphere of feeling like metta, in which case, don't practice the non-clinging, non-clinging, clinging. Practice a little bit of cultivation, enjoyment, appreciation, enjoying the recipe. Yeah, you just made this huge pot of tahina. Give it to everyone you can possibly find. Yeah, maximize the happiness. So you get some metta, share it out. That also supports that flexibility. And then we can drop in there. Everything's nature. Everything. Everything. With metta. So kind of metta and anicca together. Mm. That is a nice recipe. Yeah. The same thing, like what we were doing today, opening to all the possible Vedanas of experience. Yeah. Something is either pleasant or it's unpleasant, or it's not really particularly pleasant or unpleasant. And in relation to that, also metta, softening the contraction. Yeah. And so Rob described this as one of his dukkha methods. Yeah, which is to say, when there's dukkha, so the Buddha asks a really skillful question in his Second Noble Truth. So that's all part of his Greatest Hits album, the Four Noble Truths. You've probably all heard this one. Number one, let me hear you say it. Life is suffering. Straight in at number one. Coming in at number two, why? What causes dukkha? Yeah, why is there dukkha in our existence?
Craving.
Craving, right. So this word craving, am I still here? So that was meant to be a mic drop. Craving. Sorry, don't encourage me. So the word craving itself, tanha, is the one that he put in there as his kind of rhetorical in the call and response, right? But I think the question was meant to be left open. But like the way it's been kind of unfolded is like, hey, look, it's tanha. And therefore, craving, clinging, all of those things, don't do those. And then you won't have dukkha. But there's other things that also arise. When there's dukkha, like if we ask this question, and I think it's a great question for our practice. When there's dukkha, what else is there? Identification. Yeah, it's a stronger sense of self, right, in that moment. The self and the mission to do something in experience, yeah, and that mission is tanha, yeah, get rid of. There's also this contraction, yeah. There's always a contraction when there's dukkha, a shrinking, either a shrinking of awareness, a shrinking of the body sense, a shrinking of a sense of possibilities, and we can lessen those. So in all of these ways, so I think there being kind of three ways that Rob suggested of working with the dukkha methods, but some say two. I think he himself said two. So who am I to agree with him? Not me. So there's this possibility that we just lessen the contraction. Just lessen the contraction. Yeah. Is that contraction co-arises with the dukkha? Anything you ask, what co-arises with the dukkha? That sense of self. So then we come into this kind of third practice. If you want to lessen dukkha, you can also lessen the sense of self. This is not me, this is not mine. Yeah. What is it like if we, you know, bring that to something like the body? Yeah. Bring that to something like our feelings or that identification. This is pleasant, this is unpleasant. Yeah. Even if this isn't, I didn't, did you do that? No, it arises, that's pleasant. Who said that? We can also overrule that, say, it's kind of unpleasant actually. You know, and if you've ever, you know, engaged with something, you can see it many ways. My perceptions arise dependent on conceptions. Yeah. Look for something and it comes into being. Your perceptions dependently arise. So you can also say, oh, they're not me, not mine, if you want to. Yeah. So we're just gonna go off the cliff now. And you know, those who can hang on to the side of the car doors will go together and we'll make it to the bottom. If you fall off on the way down, don't worry, it's a gentle tumble. No harm will come. My thoughts, yeah, we mentioned this before. The thoughts occur to you. Yeah. If you were in control of your thoughts, then you can decide what your next thought will be. But who's going to think what that next thought is going to be? the thoughts just occur to us, they flow, they unfold in patterns. We can develop the conditions for different kinds of thinking, but we can't decide exactly what those thoughts are going to be. The awareness arises in combination to whatever contacts us through the sense doors. In the Dharma, they don't speak so much about there being a general consciousness, yeah, but more a sense of knowing of. So when the jackals sing, yeah, there's a consciousness arises, the knowing of sounds. And now we're not listening to them, that consciousness disappears, and there's the consciousness of listening to this voice. And then there's me sitting here in my body. It's a consciousness of tactile sense of presence, sense of knowing what's in the seeing realm. But there's just a key point here to make. Dharma talks are not arguments, they're invitations. Those four noble truths were not, this is the things to believe and say hallelujah at the end. Yeah, I agree, I'm in. It's more an invitation to investigate your experience, which is why I was saying I'm not sure entirely if tanha was meant to be there in the beginning, but actually to be a question, investigation. When you feel stress, distress, suffering, pain, tightness, what else is going on? In what way is this being fabricated, and what can we do to get out of it? Yeah. So it's not like you have to believe all of the Vedana is not you, can't possibly be you. But we could use one as an example, like go through the body. You see, it depends on how I see it. What is the body? Is it my body? Yes, of course it's my body. Is it? It's made up of food that you've gathered together and put in the body. You have no idea how you digest it, cut it, and it fixes itself. This body is just happening on its own, makes its own aches and pains and responses. So you're in a nature park claiming ownership of the whole thing. The body is nature. It belongs to nature. It will return to nature. You're lucky to have one, yeah, if you have one, or you're just lucky to hang out near one. And so we take care of it. It's our greatest friend. And the interesting thing is that, well, what if I don't identify with my body? You know, how will I treat it? And you can just say, well, actually, because you identify with the body, I think you treat it less well. I think you probably treat your friends' bodies better. Yeah. And if you imagine, this is actually on loan from my greatest friend, my greatest benefactor. And I'm going to give it back in really nice condition if I can, which means I'm only going to put good food. Healthy food that I understand is actually good for the body, for its sustenance. Not too much, not too little, you know, not just for the taste buds, but for the belly as well. You start to treat it in different ways. And we see, this is not my body. This is nature's body. Actually allows more intimacy, allows more sensitivity, allows more creativity. Yeah. So we're not giving up something that's really, really precious and important to us when we say that. We're actually allowing, opening the range and the expanse of what can come through. Yeah. So as I said, this Dharma talk, it's not an argument, it's an invitation. Do it, explore, see for yourself. Yeah. Maybe that was just advertiser's spiel that I was putting out there. Maybe there's some, you know, negativity, but explore for yourself. See, this is not my body. If that's too far to go, you can come closer, yeah? It's not just my body. It's nature's body. I also care for it. I look after it. Like with a steward. You know, it's with the steward of the nature reserve. Does that word steward make sense? It's a difficult word. Chomer. Some other suggestions?
There isn't an exact translation.
Caretaker. The one who takes care of. So what we get to see is we can bring in these lenses, these ways of looking at our experience. the Anicca lens. Ah, this will not last. Yeah, the Dukkha lens. Let's not be so contracted here. Yeah. I can't get this. This thing itself can't bring lasting satisfaction. And maybe I'm thinking getting it or getting rid of it will. And I soften with that. Let it in, let it be, and let it go. And then this next one, anatta, these thoughts, are they not my thoughts? And that doesn't mean get out of here. It means I'm not going to identify with you. These are thoughts which are happening. I'm going to respond. Yes, we move from reactivity to response ability. Our ability to respond increases. When the Buddha would speak about thinking, he would say there are basically two sorts of thinking. The kind of thinking that leads to dukkha, leads to imprisonment. Yeah. And the kind that leads away from dukkha, that leads to freedom, leads to well-being. And he gave a simple kind of set, you know, thoughts of greediness, thoughts of getting sensual pleasures, thoughts of aversiveness, thoughts of harm that we can do to another to get ahead. Yeah, these will lead you to dukkha. Yeah. They're embedded in ignorance. They're embedded in not understanding. They lead to vexation, frustration, agitation. But you want to do them anyway, right? And then there's the other kind. Yeah. Thoughts of generosity, thoughts of renunciation. So we said before, it's renunciation. It's not giving up something that's better for something that's worse. It's actually giving up something that's not so good for something that's really much more delightful. Yeah, but it's the renunciation, the willingness to put it down. You know, a kind of example that's often given is like holding on to a burning coal. It's the last thing I've got. Come on. If you put it down, it will be a lot better. Yeah, so you put down something, put your hand in a bucket of cold water, give yourself a more enjoyable experience. And thoughts of compassion, care, metta, yeah, they lead to unbinding. They lead to liberation and freedom. And somewhere in the midst of all of this, we realize we're coming to this middle way. Yeah. The things are dependent on the atmosphere, they're dependent on attention, they're dependent on us persisting. So there are skillful ways of relating, unskillful ways of identifying at times. And so finding your skill, finding your ability to identify and identify less, finding what's appropriate here that keeps you going, that keeps you supported, keeps you engaged with these practices. So there's a lot of wisdom in these teachings, but also a lot of invitations to explore for yourself. Yeah. And one of those invitations is not to get stuck in fixed views of a this or a that. An emptiness is actually somewhere in between. Yeah. The Buddha was saying at one point that things exist is one extreme. That they do not exist is another. But I accept neither is nor is not. And I declare the truth from the middle position. And in another sutta, he's saying this metta is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all desires, sense desires, yeah, is not born again into this world. Yeah. Born again into friction, in that sense. Yeah. Meaning we awaken maybe into a softer sense of existence, one that is full of creativity to head us into the direction of unbinding, less contracted, more beautiful, more peaceful ways of existing. But try it for yourself. Yeah. Try it for yourself. So we reached 8:30 somehow, and I'm going to be quiet now. So let's have a quiet minute. together just to close this session, and we'll bring this more into a practice tomorrow. Just lessening the push and the pull on whatever's appearing. Also softening sense of self, sense of mission. So letting things in, letting them be, letting them go. So may these teachings and practices serve you well. And we'll take some time now for some walking until 9 o'clock. Come back for the metta chanting. Yeah.